Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to begin, of course, looking at health and nutrition and the role of the microbiota in preventing allergies. This is the Institute of Pasteur in Paris, about what goes on in our gut influences our whole body. And then everyday access to nature improves the quality of life, from the University of Minnesota. Then we'll look at a study that finds that vitamin A directly impacts your immune cells in your intestine, Purdue University. And also we're going to look at peppermint oil and cinnamon and how that can help treat and heal chronic wounds, from the American Chemical Society, and how olive oil polyphenols improve cardiovascular markers for young healthy men, from the Journal of Nutrition, and a lot more on health and healing. Also today, dangerous new vaccine legislation pushed by the United States federal government. This audience knows that I saw what was happening in California merely as a test. There was too much money, too much behind-the-scenes lobbying by the big pharma interest for this not to be what intended as a state-by-state rollout and then a federal-mandated program. And now it's coming about. I'll talk about the Vaccinate All Children Act of 2015, H.R. 2232. It's here. If you remember, simply put, I stated that this was all so that the federal government could state that no matter where you lived, every child in America must be vaccinated with no exceptions. You could have no exemptions. And then behind that, they're looking to have an adult mandatory vaccine, which would mean that every adult in the United States would have every vaccine that they chose to give you, which could be 30 to 60 to 100 different vaccines. I would love for them just to vaccinate the corporate Democrats and the liberals first. Wouldn't that be great to see the reactions as their brain rots? Because they're the ones who have been through all of the liberal media, including those on Pacifica, championing vaccination. I didn't realize the group of people that claims to have an intellect could be so anti-science, anti-reason, anti-freedom of choice, anti-common sense, anti-public health. So it's coming, but not without an effort. I'll give you an idea of what we're doing. A new article that will be coming out that I've written, and a brand new documentary. And this time I go behind the scenes to show you the doctors who advocate in front of the public, the money they received, the connections from Big Pharma, the corruption of Big Pharma, the money they spend, and how much they get in return. That documentary is in production as we speak. There are those who are fighting back, and I'll give you more on that. Also today, from our environmental segment, scientists are now coming up with something interesting. This is from Oregon State University Science Daily. Global sea levels have risen 6 meters, that's 20 feet, or more, with just slight global warming. Slight. We have massive global warming. So 7 years ago, I predicted that we would see in our lifetimes a sea rise of 20 feet to 200 feet. It looks like that's going to happen. Then today, a former Merck pharmaceutical salesman tells us about vaccines. We hear from a man, you won't see this, but he's in a hospital bed. He was adversely affected by a vaccine, and he worked for one of the people who sponsored the vaccine legislation. Now that he has been damaged by a vaccine, Oh, does that change his perspective? Also, we'll hear from a person who was the former vice president of Pfizer, Dr. Peter Rost, influencing the medical establishment. We'll also hear from something that I just felt was so important. It's Nick Hanauer, how rich people do not create jobs. Because we're told all the time, don't tax the rich. They create jobs. No, they don't. They take away jobs. And also, the shocking truths about Walmart, how they brainwash the public. And finally, the idea that they're attacking us, meaning ISIS, because of our culture or freedom. Isn't that what George Bush said? Isn't that what Obama and others have suggested? Michael Shearer will challenge that. As you see, we take on the hard-hitting issues. Let's begin. I can remember when I was first in New York City, didn't have any money, but I was happy, loved the city, loved the people, and in fact, my first apartment in New York was, it wasn't actually an apartment. And the guy who rented it to me is still alive today. He's 90 years old. One of my buddies saw him and spoke to him recently. It was a closet. When I say a closet, it was a broom closet in a building at 82nd and 3rd Avenue. It was a walk-up. And it was a brutally hot summer. And I had was enough money to, I got a job at the UN in the on their educational foreign exchange group. In any case, I had to give him most of my rent money because of rent. In this stifling little tiny closet, there was a bathroom in the hallway. But still, it was fun when the friends that I made would come over there and they'd see this and they'd be laughing at me because of the conditions under which I lived. And you don't forget things like that. And one of the things I would do each day is I would stop off at a little tiny health food store. It was up on Broadway in the 90s, and this man always wore this pharmacy outfit, though he had no pharmacy. Evidently, he had been a pharmacist, and he only had one kind of juice, and that was carrot juice. That's it. He made the juice right in front of you, and it was, I guess the store was about 200 square feet. It was just a little tiny space, but he was very interesting, and he said to me, if you want to be healthy, clean up your gut. Watch what you eat. Good bacteria in there means you're going to be healthy. I was not experienced in the world of nutrition. I did not have that insider experience. I was very naive. I was uneducated on the matter. But what he said was compelling, and it just seemed reasonable. So I would go in there on different days and take different things that I had read in a little book. I read a little book called The Grape Cure. And then there was another little book on natural hygiene. And there was a old-time nutritionist, Pavel Arola, who believed in fermented foods. And Dr. Walker, they lived out in Arizona, who believed in having some beets. So I took grapes and beets and different vegetables in. And this guy would juice them for me. I couldn't afford juice extra. I didn't have a kitchen. I had to eat each meal out or bring stuff back to this little hole I was staying in. In any case, it was so small they had a cot in it. That's how small it was. Whoa. And stiflingly hot. I spent about half the night walking into the shower just letting cold water run over me and then going back and trying to sleep. I worked at the Institute of International Education. So anyhow, which was cool. That was the fun part. So I noticed that I did feel better. I felt really good after I had my juices, not the carrot juice. That was too much sugar, and it would cause, you know, a little lightheadedness, but especially the cabbages and other things. And he only charged me $1, and that was good. Well, now jump ahead to today. This is from the Institut Pasteur. Quote, the human body is inhabited by billions of symbiotic bacteria carrying a diversity that is unique to each individual. The microbiota is involved in many mechanisms, including digestion, vitamin synthesis, and host defense. It is well established that a loss of bacterial symbiosis promotes the development of allergies, Scientists at the Institut Pasteur have succeeded in explaining this phenomena and demonstrating how the microbiota acts on the balance of the immune system. The presence of microbes specifically blocks the immune cell's response for triggering allergies. Results are published in Science, July 9th. Okay, so what is this telling us in lay language? That little gentleman back in New York City on that little tiny health food store, he was right. He was right. Dr. Walker was right out in California. Pavlo Rolla was right. The natural hygienists were right. They believed the health begins in the gut. All of them were talking about that. That would be the theme of whole discussions. They were absolutely correct. So today we're finding that by cleaning up the bacteria in your gut, you have less likelihood of allergies. And you have a stronger immune system. Therefore, you can be around viruses and bacteria and less likely to be sick. I remember once down at the Tri-State Healing Center, the people with AIDS-defining illnesses would come in the evening. Remember, AIDS is not a single condition, but over 30 different conditions that they put under an umbrella calling AIDS. And they like to come at one time because they could share stories and they had a support. They had their own support group, and we had like 1,300 of them. So that was helping a lot of persons with AIDS. And we were using natural non-toxic protocols that I had created, and the medical doctors and medical staff were implementing, and then taking regular blood chemistry so they could actually see how well they were doing. T cells coming up, thrush going away, massive candida. One guy had candida so bad that when we came in one day, I saw the physician take one of the tongue scrapers and scrape off enough to fill up a half a cup, a paper cup, from, it looked like cotton balls that were stuck in someone's mouth. That's yeast. That's the overgrowth from a destroyed immune system. Because when your immune system is down, massive bacteria overgrowth can occur. And every night, we had a person who would come in, and this was a person who volunteered to do this, who had a partner who was being helped. This person did not have any AIDS-defining illnesses. But this person would make juices. And they said, what could I do to help? And I said, well, why don't you make some of these juices? So I'd give them a list. Like, there would be one juice they took every night was the, and we gave these to them for free, as just to help their system, was bitter melon. Bitter melon looks like a small cucumber with bumps on it. And it's very bitter. I mean, it's the kind of thing when you take a sip of it, you don't want to swallow it. It's so bitter. But then we would put some Manuka honey in that before anyone. No one in America was using Manuka honey, but I had already read the studies showing that this New Zealand honey had medicinal value that other honeys did not. And then we would put astragalus, echinacea, pau d'arco, bee propolis, which is like a black tar. And it tastes like black tar, and it can do an enormous amount of good in your body, about a quarter of a teaspoon. It doesn't take much to really have an impact. And then some colloidal silver drops and olive leaf extract, and they would have this drink, and it would be a big drink. And so they'd sip it while they were getting whatever therapy they were on, generally vitamin drips. And you would hear their stories about how they no longer had chronic diarrhea. They no longer had bloated bellies with yeast. They no longer had, one guy had yeast in his lungs. That's a quick way to die. No longer had it. All because of this. But in every single one of these, they had probiotics. I'm going to guess 20 to 40 billion, with a B, billion, probiotics per drink. And those were added. And I got this probiotic that was specially cultured to give it the highest confirmed probiotic, and we had to keep it in the refrigerator. And you just, over a period of weeks, you start to see people change. And then a period of months, you start to see them getting healthier and healthier. And then one day, they come in and say, won't be coming back. And that was always the best news of all, because they got their immune system back. Would it have been possible without the probiotics? No. So when I keep reminding you how important it is to have your probiotics, because that is your immune system. So when you have your sugar and your bagels and toast and the things that either because of defined taste, adapted taste, cultural taste, that you've defined your diet, if it's bad for you, you're paying a price because you're creating bad bacteria and you're killing good bacteria, and hence you're changing your immune system, making your immune system more susceptible. So when one of the people says, "Why don't you get sick, Gary?" I said, "Well, it's quite simple, because my immune system is kept strong. And as long as my immune system is kept strong, I can be around sick people." Because when I couldn't stand this whole myth that you can catch AIDS, you know, by, you know, hugging someone or touching their hands. So to emphasize that, you know, we did not approach any of the people with AIDS with masks on or gloves on. You know, I was there holding people's hands, giving them hugs to show, you know, you're not an infectious disease, you know, and people would learn a different reality where everyone else was making people feel bad about having a diagnosis, which in and of itself can create a psychosomatic reaction that causes a person to go into stress hormone overdrive, which, you guessed it, can kill them. Next up, so get your probiotics and get off the sugar. Everyday access to nature improves quality of life, and this is from University of Minnesota. Quote, "Natural environments are known to promote physical, mental, and spiritual healing. People can attain health benefits by spending time outside, often in remote places, to, quote, get away from it all. Now, research conducted by University of Minnesota graduate students and another team from Vancouver, British Columbia, show that green and blue spaces, meaning green is your woods and trees and grass, and blue is water, are especially beneficial. Published in Health in Place, it shows about therapeutic landscapes and well-being. And the older you get, the more important it is to have those spaces. So think of all the people who are living in an urban or suburban environment and just don't have those quality spaces. One more reason, I believe the next big movement in America, which is already starting, I see it everywhere I travel, more and more Americans moving out of the cities into the country. That's the next big move. And that alone, aside from any other reason, like making your own organic garden, but just being in the space itself is healing. And this is from Purdue University, quote, "A key set of immune cells that protect the body from infection would be lost without directions provided by vitamin A. A team of researchers from Purdue University found retinoic acid, that's your vitamin a metabolite that comes from digested vitamin A, is necessary for two of the three types of innate immune cells to reside in the intestine to find proper place." So what does this tell us? What it means is, if you want to have a stronger immune system, make sure you're getting your vitamin A every day. 10 to 25,000 units will do it. And the innate lymphoid cells first gather in the lymph nodes before traveling to their final destination. And this is where retinoic acid acts upon two of the three subsets destined for the intestines. So we don't take enough vitamin A in our society. We're vitamin A deficient, vitamin D deficient, B complex deficient, vitamin C deficient. And that's why these supplements are so important. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Immunity. And finally, peppermint oil and cinnamon could help treat and heal wounds. This is the American Chemical Society, published in their journal Nano. Quote, "Infectious colonies of bacteria called biofilms that develop on chronic wounds and medical devices can cause serious health problems and are tough to treat. But now scientists have found a way to package antimicrobial compounds from peppermint and cinnamon in tiny capsules that can both kill biofilms and actively promote healing." That's terrific. And why is it good news? Because it's inexpensive. You can buy peppermint oil in any health food store, and cinnamon oil also. And Let's face it, many bacteria clump together in sticky plaques in a way that makes them difficult to eliminate with traditional antibiotics. And doctors sometimes recommend cutting out infected tissue. And that approach is costly, it's invasive, and a lot of people end up getting an infection from the procedure and die. Well, essential oils and other natural compounds are now out there and doing what they've done all along. They kill pathogenic bacteria. And so that's why we should always have these in our home. And if you're a young man, the Journal of Nutrition says olive oil has got polyphenols that improves your cardiovascular markers. This was published in the Journal of Nutrition. Quote, the present work shows that 3-week consumption of olive oil, polyphenols, decrease LDL concentrations and LDL atherogenicity in vivo and reveals to date some of the most considerable decreases in the number of total and small LDL particles that have been reported in humans due to dietary bioactive compounds. Quote, in lay language, you do not want the bad LDL to be elevated. You want to get it down. And the olive oil that you take, if it's extra virgin and organic, is rich in polyphenols, and that lowers the bad LDL cholesterol, allowing you to have a healthier arterial wall. And with a bad arterial wall, that's where you get plaque. And with plaque, you get high blood pressure. Plaque breaks off. You have a stroke. So take your olive oil, live a longer life. Now, to our environmental segment. This is important. This comes from big-time Science Daily, right? Oregon State University. I'll quote this verbatim. Quote, a new review analyzing 3 decades of research on the historic effects of melting polar ice sheets found that global sea levels have risen at least 6 meters. Again, 6 meters is 20 feet. Above present levels on multiple occasions over the past 3 million years. What is most concerning, scientists say, is the amount of melting was caused by an increase of only 1 to 2 degrees Celsius in global mean temperature. Results of the study are being published this week in the journal Science. Quote, studies have shown that both the Greenland and Antarctic ice sheets contributed significantly to the sea rise levels above modern levels. Modern atmospheric carbon dioxide levels are today equivalent to those about 3 million years ago when sea level was at least 6 meters, that's 20 feet higher because the ice sheets were greatly reduced. End quote. In lay language, we're above that. We're above 2 degrees. We're on our way to 3 degrees Celsius. And we have massive, massive melting, never before seen in our lifetimes, of the Arctic Ice Sea, the Himalayan glaciers, the North Canadian glaciers, and Antarctica. All together, and with Greenland, you're looking at about 240 feet if all that melted. But let's just say that 1/100th of it melted. Then you're looking at enough to virtually inundate the subway systems in lower Manhattan, closing down the city, and Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Miami, all these would be flooded permanently. And then if you had a Category 1 hurricane, it would impact if it were Category 3. So we can't change this. That's why I'm suggesting be conscious. You've been warned, and it's going to happen. We're going to see a major event probably within the next 2 to 3 years. I'm Gary Null. We're going to take a break and come back. And when we come back, we're going to listen to what a former Merck salesman says about vaccines and how a person who worked in the pharmaceutical industry who had a vaccine worked for the physician in California who authored SB277, who then got a vaccine, and now he's in a hospital bed. When we hear from him, you won't see it, but he is in critical care in a hospital room from the adverse effects of vaccines. Back in a moment.
You better stop, yeah, dogging me around. if you don't stop, yeah. Put you down, 'cause I can't take it much longer. My heart's getting weak, it's not getting any stronger. You keep me so upset, my head's in a whirl. But if you wanna be my girl, you'd better stop. Yeah!
I'd like to welcome you. Nice to have you with us today. I'm Gary Knoll. Now let's hear from this former Merck salesman. Two short interviews. Both worked for the pharmaceutical industry. One of those people did his homework. You'll hear from him secondly. And he chose not to vaccinate his child. The other one actually worked for the doctor who advocated and got past the SB 277, and he's in critical care in a hospital.
You know, it's important to put a human face on suffering, especially when it's suffering from adverse reactions due to vaccinations, as we look at our informed consent being removed. People who have these adverse reactions are marginalized, they're minimized, they have their rights to sue for compensation from Big Pharma taken away. We've got a video that we want to play for you that premiered this last weekend on InfoWars. It was done by Telly Blackwood in California, and it shows the suffering of one adult man. And we need to keep this in mind, that this is not something that they're doing just for children. It's not something that's just MMR vaccines or even the vaccines that are with us today. This is going to be for any vaccines that Big Pharma wants to produce in the future and put on the schedule. And as an added irony, this man who is suffering, who has had his life forever altered, was a 7-year volunteer for the very senator who successfully rammed through the bill in California that would take away Californians' rights of informed consent.
Well, this is an interesting thing that this vaccination is what caused my illness or syndrome or whatever it is. I was a perfectly healthy person, and the only thing I did differently was get a vaccination recommended by my doctor. And now that I have this disease or syndrome or whatever the heck it is, this paralysis, this inability to have any quality of life, it's hard not to think about the decisions of the Governor Brown and Senator Richard Pan on the mandatory bill they signed into law requiring children to be vaccinated in order to get a public education. From looking on the internet and from the Mayo Clinic's website, 20,000 people a year are afflicted by this syndrome I have. Our lawmakers recently passed a law that allows vaccines to be mandated, yet the manufacturers have complete immunity of the side effects and damages caused by their vaccines. The fact that Dr. Richard Pan, a pediatrician from the University of California Davis Hospital, located on Stockton Boulevard in Sacramento, California, who runs the pediatric training program there, is an advocate of something that can cause this kind of damage or worse to children is incomprehensible. Not only does he not lack any moral character of any kind, but because this law is a primary fiscal benefit to the University of California, who does the research and development of these vaccines and then gets paid to test these vaccines and then gets paid to administrate these vaccines. It's a complete cash cow for the university. They bought themselves a senator named Dr. Richard Pan, who used to be a community pediatrician whose philosophy at a time when I personally worked for this man as a volunteer for over 7 years in the capacity of pediatric training. To have him become a tool and pawn of the university for the sake of generating billions and billions of dollars into the university, which is a direct benefit to the state of California and a direct benefit to the university, and the largest contributor to Dr. Richard Pan's Senate campaign. It's all about the money, folks. And they've taken away your right, your obligation to look after your best interests and your family. And they don't mind 10, 20%, 15% of the population being taken out in one way or another through their bad vaccines. It's time for people to exercise their choice as an American to have the say over whether or not the government can inject a foreign substance into you without any repercussions at all. Is as most un-American and unpatriotic as anyone can be, in my humble opinion.
And again, when we look at the suffering of people who have had adverse reactions to vaccines, you have to ask yourself, do you want to play Russian roulette? Well, actually, Dr. Pan and those in California and others don't want you to have that choice. And of course, you're not going to know what your odds are in this game of Russian roulette that they force upon you. One man who did educate himself chose not to have his children vaccinated. And of course, this man was a former vaccine salesman working for Merck.
Hello, my name's Scott Cooper. I was a pharmaceutical rep for Merck Sharp and Dohme, or Merck Human Health Company, as they became. I was a Vice President's Club Award winner in 1992. And I just wanted to share a story. My child was born in 91. He's now going to be 24 this year. He was never vaccinated. He grew up very, very healthy, rarely, if ever, sick, and always much healthier than his peers. When they were all running around, all the kids had runny noses, drank a lot of milk, were all vaccinated. My child was always healthy, runny nose free, always very, very healthy and smart. And if I can digress a little bit, this was 1990, so the internet wasn't really available. I had read numerous books on vaccines, and like most people, I grew up believing in vaccines from what I was told in school. And it became a real shock to me when I started reading and learning that vaccines were not only ineffective, but also there were major risks involved with vaccination. So when I found out my wife was pregnant, I had a discussion with her about not vaccinating, and of course, she was pro-vaccine, and so I made her a deal. At the time, I worked for a very large pharmaceutical company as a sales rep, and so I made her a promise. I said, I'll go to the library, I'll bring home everything I can find, pro-vaccine and anti-vaccine, and you can read for yourself, and then you can make a decision. And so that's what I did. I went and scoured the periodicals in the libraries. I actually found a very small stack of information that was pro-vaccine, and yet I came home with boxes full of books and articles that were anti-vaccine. I just gave them to her and let her make up her own mind. And I would come home from work, and she would be reading the stuff and crying from what she was reading. And so by the time my child was born, we were both on the same page about vaccination. And it was interesting because I had my OBGYN, or my wife's OBGYN, sit me down in his office and say, look, you work for a large pharmaceutical company. What do you mean you're not vaccinating? And my company actually made a lot of the vaccines. and we had a vaccine division and everything else. And I told him flat out why. We had a huge discussion about it, and while he didn't agree, we still went to the course that I wanted. During a training session with Merck, they brought in their corporate attorneys. And I just happened to ask a question, where do most of our lawsuits come from, and how large are they, and so on. And one of the attorneys said flat out that most and almost all of our lawsuits come from the vaccine division. What I'd like to say to people watching this video is to really do your own research, all right? If you're on the fence about vaccines or wondering at all whether to vaccinate your child, please, please do your own research. There are a ton of resources available out there. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, she has a site that is full of resources, thousands of pages of published medical studies showing the inherent risks that are involved with vaccines. There are a ton of books out there showing this over and over again, the vaccine damage that is being done by these vaccinations.
And that's two people. The first person was a victim of a vaccine, but you heard him say it's all about the money, and he was on the inside of that. He worked there. He saw the money coming in. And remember, when you're willing to be a university, it opens up your departments to vaccine money. Do you think for a moment any of those researchers, the scientists, the heads of the department are going to publish anything that could damage the financial viability of the university's money or the pharmaceutical industry? So that's why we're in the mess we're in right now. This is the latest on that issue. This is the update. Now, you haven't heard about this. I'm giving you a heads up. Quote, according to the Vaccinate All Children Act of 2015, H.R. 2232, the United States federal government wants to take away all religious and philosophical exemptions, or in other words, require every school-aged child to get vaccinated, whether he like it or not. Simply put, if this legislation gets passed, parents will lose their right to decide what is best for their child. So this means our medical freedom is under attack. And to push back, I'm now no longer dealing, I've dealt already with the science, that there is no legitimate science. Now, whether you vaccinate or not is your business. I never tell someone to vaccinate or not vaccinate. I simply share the research that is not provided by the mainstream media, nor the objectivity or scholarship. They act more like propagandists. I'm sharing both sides. That's why I did the silent epidemic. All the people in there were once pro-vaccine. Some are still pro-vaccine, but they just don't believe in the schedule or the type of vaccines. Like no one I interviewed, no scientist I've interviewed says that a child that does not have a mother with hepatitis should be given a hepatitis vaccine at birth. And yet it's in the schedule. It makes billions of dollars. So where's the science? Where's the helping children? It does not. Or the polio vaccine, or any of the other vaccines that do not have science behind them. In any case, so that is, are vaccines safe? The answer is no. Are they effective? The answer is they can't even define whether it's effective. Example, if you're vaccinated and you do not get a flu in a given season, it doesn't mean that the vaccine was what prevented that. What if you were taking a lot of vitamin C? What if you weren't around people who had flu viruses? What if you were in a sunny climate and your immune system was strong? So there is no science that can determine that, that is based upon population studies. But they try to make it seem as if they have the science. Well, you're supposed to get titers that are elevated of antibodies. So if you have an elevated antibody, it should protect you. But we find people are fully vaccinated, had high titers of antibodies, and came down with the disease. Therefore, it wasn't a gold standard. So that's... we have the science of epidemiologists, immunologists, toxicologists showing the safety and efficacy. You can watch that for yourself to be educated. 34 articles that Richard Gale and I have written on vaccine safety and efficacy, all fully documented, all fully referenced, no errors in them. And believe me, all of this stuff I do is scrutinized by the pharmaceutical people to see if they can find an error. So now the new documentary that they really should be concerned about, I'm exposing all the money. Physicians, legislators, state level, ALEKs, national levels, federal authorities, just one giant cesspool of corruption. Now let's just hear from another one of these people from the pharmaceutical industry. This guy woke up one day and decided maybe he should change his karmic outcome. Dr. Peter Rost, former vice president of Pfizer, talking about the pharmaceutical industry and being an insider.
Universities, health organizations, everybody that I've encountered in my former career as a pharmaceutical executive are out there with their hands out. You know, everybody's begging for money. Nobody has any money. The government doesn't have any money. Universities don't have money. Nobody's money. The only ones that have money are these big multinational corporations. And they have lots of money. And they use that money to basically buy influence. And the way it's done is, number one, you give these organizations and institutions grants for various kinds of research. You do develop research together with them. You establish friends. You make sure that they become beholden to you. And you also pay individual professors and doctors and researchers directly. You may pay them as speakers to travel around the country, $1,000, $2,000 per day, sometimes more. Give them money for programs, that the educational programs, where they can make a profit, and then they put on these programs. And they're supposed to be third-party, independent from the company, which is all fine. But as you and I can both imagine, if you have a promotional budget at a corporation, you're probably going to give that money to the universities that do the programs that most support your drug. And the ones that don't or are critical in any shape, way, or form, they're not going to get anything. And everybody obviously knows that this is how things work. And that means that even if you can officially claim, well, this is arm's length, we didn't have anything to do with it, we just gave them a grant, they can do whatever they want with it, reality is they're not going to continue to get money unless they're saying what you want them to say. They know it, you know it. It's only maybe the public that doesn't know it. And that's how you influence the medical establishment, simply with money.
Now, let us hear from, it's all about money, and that's the key to it, but that's true in many areas of life. Now I want to talk about what Nick Hanauer said in a TED Talk about rich people don't create jobs, because right now the entire discussion is give the rich a break. Look at all the ways they don't pay taxes. I don't know any really wealthy people that pay any taxes, corporate taxes, personal taxes, because they can hire the accountants to get around it. That's why I suggest one flat tax that everybody has to pay who has a business. You can't offshore any money or tax. Eliminate the IRS. Eliminate the Federal Reserve and put an additional tax on every single transaction on Wall Street. Let's say a 2% tax on every single transaction. That alone would bring us in over $2.5 trillion a year. A flat tax would gain us an additional trillion, $3.5 trillion in 1 year. Then forgive all debt, start from scratch. Here's what a TED Talk Nick Hanauer has to say on this topic.
It is astounding how significantly one idea can shape a society and its policies. Consider this one. If taxes on the rich go up, job creation will go down. This idea is an article of faith for Republicans and seldom challenged by Democrats, and has indeed shaped much of the economic landscape. But sometimes the ideas that we are certain are true are dead wrong. Consider that for thousands of years, humans believed that the Earth was the center of the universe. It's not, and an astronomer who still believed that it was would do some pretty terrible astronomy. Likewise, a policymaker who believes that the rich are job creators and therefore should not be taxed will do equally terrible policy. I have started or helped start dozens of companies and initially hired lots of people, but if there was no one around who could afford to buy what we had to sell, all those companies and all those jobs would have evaporated. That's why I can say with confidence that rich people don't create jobs, nor do businesses, large or small. Jobs are a consequence of a circle of life-like feedback loop between customers and businesses. And only consumers can set in motion this virtuous cycle of increasing demand and hiring. In this sense, an ordinary consumer is more of a job creator than a capitalist like me. That's why when business people take credit for creating jobs, it's a little bit like squirrels taking credit for creating evolution. It's actually the other way around. Anyone who's ever run a business knows that hiring more people is a course of last resort for capitalists. It's what we do if and only if rising consumer demand requires it. And in this sense, calling ourselves job creators isn't just inaccurate, it's disingenuous. That's why our existing policies are so upside down. When the biggest tax exemptions and the lowest tax rates benefit the richest, all in the name of job creation, all that happens is that the rich get richer. Since 1980, the share of income for the top 1% of Americans has more than tripled, while our effective tax rates have gone down by 50%. If it was true that lower taxes for the rich and more wealth for the wealthy led to job creation, today we would be drowning in jobs. And thank you. And yet, unemployment and underemployment is at record highs. Another reason that this idea is so wrong-headed is that there can never be enough super-rich people to power a great economy. Somebody like me makes hundreds or thousands of times as much as the median American, but I don't buy hundreds or thousands of times as much stuff. My family owns 3 cars, not 3,000. I buy a few pairs of pants and shirts a year like most American men. Occasionally, we go out to eat with friends. I can't buy enough of anything to make for the fact that millions of unemployed and underemployed Americans can't buy any new cars, any clothes, or enjoy any meals out. Nor can I make up for the falling consumption of the vast majority of middle-class families that are barely squeaking by, buried by spiraling costs and trapped by stagnant or declining wages. Here's an incredible fact, that if the typical American family still retained the same share of income that they did in 1970, they'd earn like $45,000 more a year. Imagine what our economy would be like if that were the case. Significant privileges have come to people like me, capitalists, for being perceived as job creators at the center of the economic universe, and the language and metaphors we use to defend the current economic and social arrangements is telling. It's a small jump from job creator to the creator. This language obviously wasn't, this language was not chosen by accident. And it's only honest to admit that when somebody like me calls themselves a job creator, we're not just describing how the economy works, but more particularly, we're making a claim on status and privileges that we deserve. Speaking of special privileges, the extraordinary differential between the 15% tax rate that capitalists pay on carried interest, dividends, and capital gains, and the 35% top marginal rate on work that ordinary Americans pay, is kind of hard to justify without a touch of deification. We've had it backwards for the last 30 years. Rich people like me don't create jobs. Jobs are a consequence of an ecosystemic feedback loop between customers and businesses. And when the middle class thrives, businesses grow and hire, and owners profit. That's why taxing the rich to pay for investments that benefit all is such a fantastic deal for the middle class and the rich. So, ladies and gentlemen, here's an idea worth spreading. In a capitalist economy, the true job creators are middle-class consumers. And taxing the rich to make investments that make the middle class grow and thrive is the single shrewdest thing we can do for the middle class, for the poor, and for the rich. Thank you.
And finally today, I'd like for you to hear the thoughts, at least as many as we can get into the completion of the program, of the shocking truth about Walmart from Abby Martin. Let's listen in.
Walmart. sure you guys have probably heard one or two bad stories about Walmart in the past. But, you know, I think the corporation's been given a bad rap. And you want to know why? Because I'm a sucker for advertising. Nothing I love more than pop music and Hollywood celebs. So when Walmart held its annual shareholders meeting in Fayetteville, Arkansas, it was like the perfect storm for me and for the 14,000 Walmart employees that attended. The event featured special in-house performances by award-winning artists like Jennifer Hudson, Kelly Clarkson, and John Legend. And in a surprise twist, heartthrob actor Hugh Jackman graced the stage and spoke very sincerely about a very important subject. How awesome Walmart is! But just when you thought it couldn't get any better, guess who showed up? The Maverick himself, Tom Cruise. Oh, yeah, baby. Tom Cruise, one of the most overpaid Hollywood celebrities, took to the Walmart stage to speak about why he loves the company so much.
The culture that you have going here is really like no other. The company, I'm sure you all know this, but it is a role model for how business can address some of the biggest issues facing our world.
Come on, man. How much did Walmart pay you to say this crap? Are you really that starved for work right now, bro? But you know what? I actually agree with you, Tom. The culture Walmart creates is like no other. In fact, it's created the blueprint for the global race to the bottom by chasing the highest profits for the lowest wages. Walmart's also been described as an economic death star, destroying everything in its path, leaving behind nothing more than a homogenous wasteland. And although the corporation promises jobs by investing in local communities, instead it decimates small businesses. And Tom, the only role model Walmart serves as is for other monopolistic, vulturistic corporate conglomerates to eat up everything in their paths, throwing their employees under the bus, and also not giving a damn about the public good. So what other glowing compliments did Tom Cruise have to say about the mega giant?
It's using its size and scale to improve women's lives across the world. Walmart is committed to helping people eat better.
Using its size and scale to improve the world, huh? All right, let's talk about its sheer size. The company operates under 55 different names worldwide. Its $447 billion revenue makes it the 23rd largest economy in the world. Guys, that's bigger than the country of Sweden. So let's address how Walmart's massive reach helps improve world businesses and women's lives. Oh, wait, it doesn't. In fact, it does the exact opposite. Right now, the company is embroiled in the largest sex discrimination lawsuit ever filed. Take a look.
Christine is one of the lead plaintiffs in the case against Walmart, and she's accusing the company of discriminating against her and against perhaps as many as 1.5 million other women, former and current employees.
Yep, you heard that right, up to 1.5 million women. So, how else is Walmart destroying the planet? Well, let's take a look back at the devastating building collapse in Bangladesh that just killed 1,129 human beings. See, Walmart is the second biggest garment producer in the country. The company has been there for nearly a quarter century, yet has done nothing to protect its Bangladeshi workers. But to make matters worse, Walmart's also one of the only companies that has refused to sign an international workers' safety agreement that would ensure proper safety standards for its sweatshops. What a good role model indeed. But you know what? I understand. They don't want to lose that couple of pennies on every garment. Because heaven forbid Mike Duke, Walmart's CEO, would have to shave a couple bucks off his $20 million a year salary. A far cry from the $8.81 that the average Walmart employee makes. And if that's not bad enough, the extraordinarily low wages paid to Walmart workers costs taxpayers, you and I, money. Yep, according to a study released by congressional Democrats, Walmart has more workers enrolled in public programs like Medicaid and food stamps than any other employer. This costs taxpayers between $900,000 and $1.7 million per store. So let's do a quick recap. Sweatshops, slave labor, sex discrimination, and looting. Oh, wait, I forgot one. According to the Washington Examiner, Walmart has also pled guilty to improperly dumping pesticides into public sewers and landfills. But you better not complain about any of this, because Walmart's notorious for union crushing and suppressing workers from organizing. All of this is why you're seeing an unprecedented strike movement grow throughout the supply chain, with employees nationwide now planning massive walkouts on Black Friday, the company's biggest sales day of the year. Look, Don't let yourself be taken by Hollywood stars and catchy Walmart slogans, because now you know what's really going on behind the scenes. So the next time you...
Yeah, that's Abby Martin. Have a nice day, everyone. Look forward to sharing more on our next program.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see, no, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid, just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Stand by me. If the sky that we look upon should tumble and fall, or the mountain should crumble the sea, I won't cry, I won't cry, no, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand by me. And darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Oh, stand now. Stand by me, stand by me. Stand by me, stand by me, whenever.